So I think it's safe to say that the brain has a pretty bright future that it is creating on its own. Have you noticed? Working with other brains. The story of human evolution, in a way, is the story of the brain trying to know itself. Our next guest has been working for decades to develop tools for the brain to express itself in new ways. He invented a digital scanning machine for reading for blind people that was a revelation to blind musician Stevie Wonder. And with Stevie, he went on to create a line of revolutionary synthesizers that changed the way the brain approaches music. They're named after him, the Kurzweil keyboards. Today, Ray Kurzweil is something of a futurist, designing tools for extending the future of the brain and also writing about how he'll live long enough to experience that future himself. Kurzweil's mission for immortality is chronicled in his latest book, How to Create a Mind, The Secret of Human Thought Revealed.
Scientists do now have the tools to actually see inside the brain with enough precision to see our brain create our thoughts, and our thoughts create our brain, because that's part of the secret of human thought. And these kinds of tools do end up pretty quickly in the hands of individuals, just as we now have enormously powerful computers and communication devices in our own hands and access to all of human knowledge. But the key thing, and what I articulate in the book, is that we actually have enough information now about the brain from our own thought experiments, from work in artificial intelligence, which tells us what techniques might work, and from neuroscience, much of which is very recent, to actually describe how the neocortex works. And that's the part of our brain where we do our thinking.
And if we understand the architecture of the biological brain, does it mean that we can create something that is sort of post-biological?
Well, there are three reasons to understand the brain. One is to do a better job of fixing it. So, you know, people with diseases like Parkinson's are already putting computers connected right into their brains. And the latest generation allows you to download new software to that neural implant connected to your brain. Secondly, it gives us more insight into ourselves. That's really the goal of the arts and sciences. And then thirdly, it does, as you say, give us the sort of biologically inspired paradigms to create better artificial intelligence. And we'll use that in turn to make ourselves smarter. We're doing that already. The cell phone I have in my hand makes me smarter, gives me access to all of human knowledge with a few keystrokes. Ultimately, these devices will go inside our bodies and brains, keep us healthy, and allow us to expand our thinking right into the cloud.
Envision for us a set of brain prosthetics in the future that would be both invisible and actually have some of the capabilities of the objects that we have in our hands, like laptops and cell phones, today.
Right. Well, it's not going to look like the Matrix. We're not going to have a plug in the back of our head. It's going to be wireless communication. Go out to the 2030s, computerized devices will be the size of blood cells, and we'll just put them in non-invasively. They'll augment our immune system, combating disease, and they'll go into our brains and provide gateways right from our brain to the cloud, just like your phone is, in fact, a gateway to the cloud. You'll have those right in your brain, and you'll be able to access all of human knowledge from your brain, have brain-to-brain communication, and actually expand the scope and depth and the level of hierarchy of your thinking.
And as you envision this, is this something that gets monitored on, like, a computer screen, or does that even become obsolete because it will be all working so simultaneously?
It really will be an extension of your brain, ultimately. I mean, right now we have these interfaces where we look at a screen. Even that, just in the next few years, is going to, you know, go right inside our glasses with technologies like Google Glass, where you'll be kind of in augmented reality all the time. You know, look at someone, there'll be a little pop-up that tells you who they are, and your screen won't be a little keyhole that you look through like your cell phone today. It'll be the whole visual field of view that will go inside your brain, and you'll actually have direct connection from your brain non-invasively to these technologies. So it really will become part of who we are.
When this convergence completely happens, what will we think of life as? A series of downloads from various embodiments, one to the other, the body just being one on the way to different other platforms where our brains will have life?
Well, technology has always been an extension of ourselves. We create tools to make up for our own limitations. We couldn't reach fruit at that higher branch, so 10,000 years ago, we created a tool that could help us to extend our physical reach. You know, we now have tools that allow a kid in Africa with a smartphone to access all of human knowledge with a few keystrokes. So these tools are already extending our mental reach, and they'll just become part of who we are. People say, oh, we won't be human, you know, if we become partly machine. In my view, that's what it means to be human. It's, we are already a biological, technological civilization. We extend our limitations through our tools, and it's literally going to make us smarter. Intelligence is really the most important, you know, it's a force in the universe. That's what allows us to overcome our problems. You know, life expectancy was 37 just 200 years ago. We, you know, doubled it through the force of our intelligence. And by making ourselves more intelligent, we're going to make even greater progress.
How do you, who's so optimistic about the changes that are afoot, how do you think about your own lifetime? What is it? How long will it be? Where will you be in 20 years? What capability do you hope comes to fruition before your biological clock, if there is such a thing, runs out?
If I were to give you a number, it's not like, so let's say I said 50 years. Do you think nothing is going to happen in that 50 years? During that 50 years, we'll extend it again. But if I can do it and I'm, you know, 64, then certainly people who are younger have an even better chance.
Well, well done, Ray Kurzweil, a futurist on a mission to make us all immortal, and I'm grateful for that. His latest book, How to Create a Mind, The Secret of Human Thought Revealed. Thanks so much, Ray.
My pleasure.
One more thing before we go. We began with the story of a brain delivering a disturbing message to a young woman in the form of a stroke. That message became a 2-year life struggle for Eljan Wardali to recover speech and movement. That process of recovery has given her a new relationship with her brain. It's not scientific, but it really reminds me of how some of our scientists have been carrying on a dialogue inside their heads to solve a mystery right in front of them. There's something new inside Eljan Wardali's brain. She calls it, well, her stroke brain.
It's another little person. It really is. And I haven't given it a name yet, but I have daily conversations with myself, with my brain. I guess it started when I was home and I was trying to walk. And my right side was much slower than my left. And I had, come on, brain, you can do this. You can go faster. You can do this. And every day I would try and walk one block and it would be very exhausting. And I'd constantly tell myself, come on, you can do this. But even now I still have a little problems and I still have those little conversations with my brain. The brain, the stroke brain, is saying, okay, well, I'm just going to be a little lazy, or I'm going to slur today because I'm tired and I'm not going to try as hard. Or when I walk, I'm going to let my right side go a little limp. I'm going to be lazy. And then I have to say, the afterstroke me is saying, no, you have to, come on, buck up. You can do this. That's what you have these daily little conversations, and that's what you're going through. And the simplest things, just like grabbing a cup, can be very difficult. If it had a smell, it would be a cake slowly baking.
Right?
And you're constantly getting closer and closer to the finished product. But it's so slow. It's such a slow process.
A metaphor about a brain made in a brain from someone who nearly lost hers. That stroke survivor and filmmaker Eljan Wardali, one of the many voices we heard this hour. Let us know what your brain is doing, what it's thinking, what it's saying to you. We request that every day. The Takeaway, 8778-MY-TAKE. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Henry Luce Foundation for Increased Understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway is produced by WNYC and Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.